The night opens with pressure. A woman sits in a hard plastic chair inside a packed emergency room. Her breath breaks in slow, sharp bursts as a fresh wave of pain locks her body. Staff move around her with the speed of routine. Their glances slide past her. She presses her palms into her thighs and tries to stay upright. She has been waiting for hours. No one has asked for a pain scale. Her chart carries three clipped lines that shrink her symptoms. Outside the room, monitors beep through the air. Another woman describes the same struggle. She spent years fighting for someone to notice what her body kept warning. The pattern repeats in dozens of accounts. Pain that steals sleep. Pain that weakens legs. Pain written off before a single test is ordered. The pressure builds in every story. A simple question hangs over them. Why does the system designed to treat suffering fail to believe women who speak it plainly? The emergency room feels stretched thin. People wait along the walls. Fluorescent lights spill across the floor and pull every detail into view. In the far corner, a woman grips the edge of her seat while her stomach tightens. Her breathing slows as she tries to ride out another surge. She forces her voice steady when the nurse walks past. The nurse stops for a moment, flips open the chart, and writes two short notes that soften the severity of what the woman reported 20 minutes earlier. The nurse closes the chart without a follow-up question and moves on. She stays still and listens to the room. A man with a broken hand gets taken in before her. A teenager with a fever gets a wheelchair and an escort. She stays seated while pain pushes her forward until her forehead almost touches her knees. Another nurse walks by. The nurse glances at her, nods, and continues down the hall. Interview files gathered for the investigation hold the same tone. A woman named in records describes losing whole days to pain that folded her over the edge of a bed. She explains how each doctor told her it sounded normal. Every visit ended with the same line. Some periods are worse than others. She left each appointment with no tests, no referrals, and no answers. A second woman reports that she learned how to breathe through sharp cramps because no one believed her when she said they made her faint. She said she could track the worsening pattern by counting the days she missed work. She said her supervisor asked if she was exaggerating to get out of early shifts. She tried to keep going until she collapsed on a bus. Paramedics took her in, but the exam ended quickly. The notes in her file read, "Mild discomfort." The investigation pulls data from national sources that underline a deeper problem. Delayed diagnosis of menstrual disorders raises long-term risk. Researchers point to untreated inflammation. They point to structural barriers. They point to a pattern where women speak clearly about pain but face disbelief before the exam begins. Records show shorter intake conversations when the complaint is menstrual. Records show faster dismissal. These findings repeat across regions. Back in the emergency room, the woman's lips lose color. She tries again to get help. Her voice cracks halfway through the sentence. A doctor steps near her and asks if she has taken any painkillers. She says yes. The doctor nods and says the pain may be stress. The doctor does not examine her. The doctor signs the chart and walks away. Her hands tremble as she presses them to her abdomen. She watches another hour pass. The lights feel hotter. Her legs shake as she stands and tries to stretch her back. The nurse looks over and tells her someone will see her soon. She lowers herself back into the chair and waits. The investigation notes that her case is not unusual. Many women interviewed recall the same exchange. They ask for help. They get told to breathe through it. Their words carry weight only after symptoms grow too large to hide. Interview clips play over the scene. One woman states that she learned not to mention period pain at the start of any appointment. She feared the dismissal. She feared being told to rest. She feared leaving with the same unresolved problem. She describes pain that radiated into her legs and pushed her against walls. She describes losing appetite. She describes nights where the pain hit so hard she woke up on the floor. She kept a list of these episodes to show doctors. She said the list never changed the outcome. Inside the hospital, the woman in the chair curls her fingers into a fist. Her breath shakes again. She lets out a low sound, and the nurse finally approaches. The nurse checks her temperature and pulse. The nurse writes another short line. The nurse steps away. The woman stares at the doorway that leads to the exam area. She stays there while the crowd around her shifts. The investigation notes a turning point. Pain dismissed at intake leads to fewer diagnostic steps. Fewer steps lead to missed findings. Missed findings extend the cycle. By the time some women secure a diagnosis, the condition has spread or deepened. Once that happens, treatment takes longer, and recovery becomes uncertain. Each interview adds to the weight of this pattern. The woman in the emergency room presses her nails into her palm. Her jaw locks, her eyes close. She breathes through the wave again. No one calls her name. The silence inside families forms its own system. Women describe how the first dismissal often comes long before a medical visit. One woman explains that her pain started in early adolescence. She told her mother she felt stabbing pressure that made her legs weak. Her mother looked tired from work and told her to lie down and breathe through it. The mother said every woman deals with this. She said the pain would settle with age. The girl believed her at first. She tried to follow the advice. Each month, the same scene returned. She held the edge of the bed, waiting for the pain to loosen its grip, and heard the same line from across the room. You will get used to it. Another woman remembers trying to speak up at the dinner table. She told her family she could not focus on schoolwork because of the pain. Her father nodded without lifting his eyes from the television. Her mother asked if she had taken a pill. Her brother asked why she made a big deal out of something everyone understood. She fell silent. She felt her voice shrink in her own home. A different account describes a young woman who lived with her partner in a small apartment. Her symptoms hit hard during one week in March. She curled into a ball on the floor and tried to breathe. Her partner walked through the kitchen and asked if she wanted food. She said she needed help getting up. He paused, then said he was running late. He told her to rest until it passed. She stayed on the floor for almost an hour. When he returned that evening, he seemed annoyed by the unfinished chores. She did not mention the pain again. School adds another layer. A former student recalls begging her teacher to let her sit out of physical activity. She said she felt dizzy and weak. The teacher told her to push through it. The teacher said attendance mattered. The student tried to join the class, but her legs buckled. Other students whispered that she was pretending to avoid the drill. She carried that whisper for years. Workplaces mirror the same tone. A supervisor at a retail store remembers women asking for short breaks during heavy cramps. He told them he could not approve it unless they looked visibly ill. He believed he was following policy. The women felt they had to hide their symptoms. One worker said she cried in the stockroom and wiped her face before returning to the register. The investigation uncovers a deeper pattern in recorded interviews. Across cultures and households, there is a belief that severe period pain is a test of resilience. Women are expected to endure. They are expected to stay silent. They are expected to move through routines as if the pain is minor. These expectations shape how girls grow into adults who hesitate to speak honestly about what their bodies feel. A woman in her 30s describes how dismissal in her family shaped her medical encounters. She said she learned early that complaining brought no change. She convinced herself that her symptoms were normal. She lost count of the nights she curled up on the bathroom floor. She forced herself to attend work because she feared being labeled unreliable. When her condition worsened, she went to a clinic. She struggled to find the right words. She downplayed the pain without realizing it. Her voice reflected what she absorbed at home. Another interview reveals how cultural messages push the same cycle. Women are told pain builds character. They are told others have it worse. They are told rest is weakness. One woman recalls sitting at a family gathering, doubled over, while relatives joked about monthly struggles. She smiled through it because she learned not to make others uncomfortable with her truth. Over time, these patterns create a quiet threshold. Many women do not seek care until they can no longer stand upright. The investigation notes that dismissal becomes a learned response. It grows inside homes, classrooms, relationships, and workplaces. It shapes how women describe their pain. It shapes how others hear. By the time they reach a medical setting, the disbelief already feels familiar. A daughter in one interview says she finally confronted her mother. She says she needed help. The mother paused and realized her own mother had dismissed her the same way. She apologized. She never intended harm. She said she thought she was teaching strength. The daughter said she wanted understanding, not toughness. The conversation marked the first time someone in her family acknowledged the weight of her pain. The investigation shows that when dismissal is repeated across generations, it becomes culture. It becomes rule. It becomes instinct. It becomes a quiet force that tells women to hide symptoms until hiding is no longer possible. Specialists interviewed for the investigation describe a simple truth. Severe period pain is not a routine hardship. It can signal conditions that grow worse without early evaluation. They explain how the body alerts itself through escalating symptoms. They outline patterns that demand attention. They stress that a woman who cannot stand upright is not experiencing typical discomfort. They speak clearly because they have seen what delayed care can cost. A gynecologist with 20 years of experience states that diagnostic criteria shifted over the past two decades. Earlier standards relied heavily on visual confirmation during surgery. This meant many women waited years before anyone named their condition. Newer approaches give weight to patient reports. Imaging supports the process. The shift matters, but the gap between guidelines and practice remains wide. A case profile in the investigation highlights this gap. Records show a woman who reported sharp abdominal pain for 4 years. She missed school. She missed work. She visited clinics during episodes that made her faint. Staff often wrote that she appeared stable. They discharged her without referral. When she finally saw a specialist, the disorder had advanced. Surgery became necessary. The outcome was not catastrophic, but the recovery took long months. She told the investigator she kept wondering how different her life would be if someone had listened earlier. Medical staff in another interview point to intake procedures. Many clinics still rely on brief symptom checklists. These lists reduce complex pain into single words. Cramping. Heavy. Moderate. Mild. They say this format contributes to the underestimation of symptoms. They argue for longer interviews. They argue for specific questions that test severity. They argue that a woman's report should guide the investigation from the start. Reform efforts appear in pockets. A few hospitals have created dedicated women's pain pathways. These pathways require staff to document duration, intensity, and functional impact. They require follow-up questions. They require early referrals. Nurses say the changes reduce misdiagnosis. Patients say they feel seen for the first time. Policy discussions carry weight in the investigation. Advocates push for mandatory training on gender bias and pain assessment. They argue that cultural beliefs shape clinical decisions. They point out that women often need to insist on tests that should be standard. They present research showing that belief in women's pain affects treatment outcomes. They call for oversight that tracks how fast clinics respond to severe symptoms. The investigation includes a grounded view from a primary care doctor who admits that time pressure plays a role. Each appointment slot is short. Doctors move fast. They rely on quick assumptions. She says this is not an excuse. She says it is a structural danger. She says the only solution is training that forces clinicians to slow down when a patient reports severe cyclical pain. She says they must treat those words as a red flag, not an inconvenience. The final set of interviews comes from women who finally receive answers. They describe relief mixed with anger. Relief that their symptoms had a name, anger that it took years to reach that point. They speak about friendships strained by disbelief. They speak about partners who apologized only after hearing a diagnosis. They speak about the emotional cost of shouting into silence. One woman remembers standing in a parking lot after her appointment. She had waited more than 10 years for someone to confirm her condition. She said she felt both vindicated and exhausted. She walked to her car slowly. She sat behind the wheel and let the truth settle. Her pain had never been imagined. Her body had been telling the truth the whole time. The investigation closes with a clear tension. Systemic disbelief cannot be corrected by a single guideline or reform. It demands cultural change. It demands clinical change. It demands family change. Specialists say the answer starts with taking women at their word. They say early evaluation prevents long-term harm. They say the cost of disbelief is written through thousands of stories. The final question reaches back across every chapter. Women describe pain that takes their breath. They describe years stripped away by uncertainty. They describe the long fight to be heard. Their accounts show what happens when silence becomes the rule.